feels like corn and soybeans are ready to give up heading into next week's supply-side reports from USDA. At least that's what the charts are suggesting. Of course, add as much water to the Midwest as we did in the last full week of June, and it probably should be difficult to kickstart a summer rally.
Live from someplace near the heart of the Corn Belt via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll have a conversation with Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions. Right after the news from Mike Pearson, we'll get a report on price action from Oliver Slope of Blue Line Futures. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now, the host of AgriTalk. He puts the hip in chip, the flow in flory, a man who doesn't need to shave because he's on the radio, but he did it anyway, Chip Flory.
Nice! Davis would be proud of you there, Big Apple. Good work.
Well, I felt I kind of had to make up for this morning.
Oh, man, I tell you. Hey, let's bring in Pearson. He's got the news for us. Mike Pearson, Zahner Ag Hedge. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm fantastic, Chip. How are you doing? Good. You had a big interview this morning.
Yes, we did. That's why I wanted to bring you in. And after Joe mentioned this morning, that it was an interesting conversation with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer this morning. Ambassador Lighthizer, I think he was as forthcoming as he could be in many of his answers. And you know, I realize when you say that, you go back. I went back and listened to it, and there were some times that he had to be a little guarded in his answers, but he did let us in on a little inside baseball, Pearson.
I heard about that. What'd he do?
Well, it's when we were talking about the comment from Peter Navarro on Monday night that rattled the grain markets, that rattled the equities. At one point, the Dow was like 400 points lower on Navarro's comments. Evidently, Ambassador Lighthizer was with President Trump when President Trump sent the message out, hey, don't worry about it. All's clear with the trade agreement with China. It's still in place and still functioning. So it's almost like Ambassador Lighthizer kind of signed off on that tweet. It was really cool to get that perspective.
That is cool. And Chip, it's cool. Yeah. You've got a corridor to the highest reaches of power in the world. That's pretty awesome.
Hey, that was really cool. I mean, it was real. We really appreciate the ambassador making time to come on AgriTalk and to offer up his perspectives to the AgriTalk listeners. Just really, really cool stuff. All right, man. Hey, before we get to Oliver, let's go ahead and get to what was moving the markets around.
Let's do it. Let's take a look. As we look at the wheat market, the complex reversed the trend from earlier this week with sellers back in winter wheat futures as buyers went back to spring wheat. Traders noted the ongoing winter wheat harvest as a source of selling interest. Traders also noted the risk of a hot, dry pattern in the Black Sea region as a source of support for prices. July hard red winter wheat was 3¾ cents lower at 431¼. July SRW fell 4¾ cents to 481¼. And July spring wheat was 2 cents higher at 516¾. Quarters, Chip.
You know, every now and then, Mike, you look at the market reports coming from the wire services. Heck, you even look at that paragraph that you just read, and you realize sometimes the comments are made to fit the price action. It spreads. It's the spreading going on in this wheat market. I don't think they were looking at any fundamentals in the market today. It was, okay, we moved the spring wheat, winter wheat spread hard enough in one direction. Let's take it back the other way.
Yeah, I think you're right, Chip. Taking a look at the corn market, ethanol production in the weekend of June 19th added averaged 893,000 barrels per day, up 52,000 barrels from the previous week. Ethanol stocks in the week fell 312,000 barrels to a manageable 21 million barrels. Traders noted this was the eighth consecutive week of production increases and ninth consecutive week of drawdown in ethanol stocks. And consider this, ethanol production is now within 18.4% of the 2020 high and is 66.3% above the low water mark for the year. July corn futures were 0.75 cents lower at 324¼. September corn slipped 2 cents to 327. December corn closed at 333¾, down 3 cents on the day.
Okay, let's just round that drop from the 2020 high to 20%. Being 20% off of the high for the year is not good news. but it is so much better than what we were at the end of at the end of April. That it, this ethanol market almost feels like it's a source of support for corn prices right now, even though we're still 20% off the high on ethanol production. Still a long ways to go, but it's a whole lot better than it was.
Baby steps right there. Taking a look at soybeans, there has been just one daily export sales announcement for soybeans this week, which means that traders will be watching tomorrow's weekly export sales report very closely for any hidden sales made in the last week. August bean futures opening about steady and tried to rally, but ran into overhead resistance at 875. Bean futures then turned to the downside and posted a low range close. Chart watchers are concerned that this could set the market up for some pressure in the last two sessions of the week. July bean futures were 4.25 cents lower at 870 3/4. August beans dropped 4.5 cents to close at 867.5. November new crop down closed at 870 even, down 4 cents, Chip.
Yeah, don't ignore the technical pressure in here. It's starting to build.
Let's take a look at the softs. Cotton dropped 1.38 points to 60.6166. December cotton softened 23 to 59.21. In livestock, August live cattle futures were 85 cents lower at 96.35, and Dease cattle were down 17.5 to 103.35. August feeders slipped 32.5 to 132.87.5. Lean hog futures on the defensive ahead of tomorrow's quarterly hogs and pigs report. July lean hogs down 97.5 to 45.92.5. December hogs fell 30 cents to 52 bucks. Even one last thing, Chip, class three milk futures down the 75 cent daily trading limit in the July, August and September contracts.
Yeah, that milk market, the volatility is really building in there. So you need to be active with your risk management. Mike, thank you so much for your help this week. We really appreciate you, man.
Always a pleasure, Chip. Love having a conversation with you.
Excellent. Excellent. That's Mike Pearson, Zahner Ag Hedge. Thank you so much. All right, let's bring in Oliver Slope. Blue Line Futures. How you doing, Oliver?
I'm doing good. It feels a little weird calling in on Wednesday, though, I got to say.
Exactly. Thanks for being flexible and mixing it up with us. We'll have Bubba tomorrow. What caught your eye today? At the start of the show, it feels like corn and soybeans are starting to give it up.
Yeah, it certainly did today, and it was kind of a risk-off mentality really across the markets, as we've seen some spikes of COVID cases in Texas and Florida, and that kind of rejuvenates some fears and concerns about the potential demand and shutdowns in areas, and that obviously led to a lot of pressure. On top of that, obviously, we had the concerns earlier this week with regards to the trade war, and that did a little bit of technical damage on the charts, albeit it was on an untimable headline in the middle of the night, almost on light volume, but it did do some damage. And today's sessions really in corn and beans didn't do a whole lot to help the technical picture, especially when you're looking at some of those new crop contracts with December corn making a new, not a new closing low, but for the move. And that's really not shaping up all that pretty. And there's not really a whole lot to get too excited about. So really been telling guys, it's just one of those years you got to temper the expectations. There's not a whole lot to really move this market significantly higher here in the near term.
Yeah. That's, again, like I said at the start of the show, you put this much water into the middle of the country in the last full week of June, it's probably going to be hard to kickstart a summer rally. That's about it, man.
I think so, yeah.
Yep. Oliver, thanks, man. We'll have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.
Oliver!
Love it. All right. Brian Hoops is up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Corn was lower today. Soybeans traded to the downside. Soybean meal actually worked slightly higher. Soybean oil was under pressure. Winter wheat futures were lower. Live cattle nearby feeder cattle futures were under pressure, and lean hogs were also lower. Although you get out to those back month contracts in the lean hogs, we did see a little bit of strength there. Cotton lower, milk limit down in the most actively traded contracts. Today's guest, Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions, is back with us. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, good to talk with you, Chip. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing just fine, just fine. You know how they keep saying that over the next several days we've got the risk of pop-up showers? You know, they could just come out of nowhere. Yeah, I just had of those here at the Flory Ranch in Northeast Iowa.
So. Yeah, you always get those with the instability in the air and the atmosphere. They're pretty common, and that's why it's, you know, so hard to get a drought in the summer. That's why we don't have them very often.
That's right. That's right. All right. Hey, speaking of Iowa, let's go over to West Central Iowa. We've got a friend of the show on the line. Get a crop report from Mailman Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, doing just fine, Chip. Thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, it's good. It's good to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's been a while, but you were saying how with all the rain and it's hard to get the markets moving. But here where I'm delivering mail, the corn's rolled up and it's only 80 degrees and real light wind. And some of the soybean leaves are cupped even.
Mm-hmm. So you're right in the middle of the state, right, Mike? I mean, over in the western part, but in the middle of the state.
Right, right. Yep. Right on Highway 30.
Yep.
Between Carroll and Denison.
Okay. Is it a big area that you're talking about, Mike, that's seeing that stress?
Basically, my whole route, and I cover 150 square miles a day.
Yep.
We definitely need rain.
Yeah. Yeah. You got some here not that long ago, but it wasn't much. It wasn't enough to take the stress off.
No, it was good for a couple of days, but that's all gone. Yeah. And, we're supposed to get a shot maybe Friday, but, it seems like they're all going around us.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. How's other things, Mike? You okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, things are good here. Yeah,
good.
We don't have the big, real big outbreaks of the corona, but a packing plant at Denison had an outbreak. But otherwise, everything is going good around here.
Good deal. Hey, stay in touch this growing season, okay? It's good to hear from you.
All righty. Thanks.
All right, that's Mailman Mike over in West Central Iowa. It's good to have those kinds of guys, Brian, that keep you up to date with what's going on. And that's one of the tough things about this year, and we've mentioned it, that it's not perfect everywhere. It's not soggy everywhere. It's just a really weird mix of conditions out there. But there are those dry areas on the far eastern side of the belt and the western side of the belt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in fact, I drove through Denison last weekend and saw some of the crop that he's referring to. And, yeah, and there is some areas that certainly are in a hill area in that geographical part of Iowa. They could use some rain. They need more rain than what they've had. They need rain quite frequently and flat. And in fact, because it's not very flat, a little bit more hilly, rougher ground. And so there's certainly some areas that are going to be stressed. You go out into Nebraska, there's areas in Kansas, certainly some areas that are stressed. And then there's other areas, of course, that are really looking good, probably going to have the best crops they've ever had this year.
Yeah. 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 And I don't mean to, I'm not going to downplay it at all, because in the drought monitor, at least the latest update, showed the state of Indiana basically abnormally dry across the whole state. You got to go back a lot of years when we had a drought that was shaped like Illinois, that was in Illinois. This year, Indiana is kind of experiencing some similar conditions to what you were just explaining over in the Western Belt. So we got to keep an eye on that as well. Supply side is one thing, Brian. On the demand side, that's where it feels like if we're going to put some fuel into a rally in this grain market, it's going to have to come from the demand side, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. You know, we're kind of running out of time to for a supply-led rally in this corn market. We're at the seasonal high point of the year. We're going to be pollinating in several weeks. We'll be talking about pollination again, and the forecast going into that time frame really don't look threatening. And you can see the market over the last 2 days taking a lot of weather premium out of this out of this corn market. Our typical rallies are 25 to 40 cents for the summer. And if you go back to our April lows and to these highs that we just scored in June, on June 8th, we're looking at about a 23 cent rally. And so that's, you know, that's about as close as you're going to get when sometimes when you talk about averages, that's close enough, especially when you're talking about carryover of over 3 billion bushels. So we're kind of running out of time, closing the door on that window of opportunity to market corn, at least from a supply standpoint. The soybean market hasn't removed all that much premium, as that's more of a crop of August, and we don't have the forecast going out that far yet. So, but the, you know, corn's telling you what's going to happen if we don't have adverse weather. The soybeans are going to follow the same path and start retreating, giving back this rally that they've put together during the month of May and the first half of June.
Okay. Now, on the demand side for corn, I like the trend that we're seeing on the ethanol, the corn for ethanol use.
Yeah, it's an improvement. You know, we saw the weekly EIA report out that came out this morning showed another improvement over what we saw just a week ago. We're still using more, about 5 million bushels more per week than what we did the previous week. So that trend is encouraging, but we're still well below where we were a year ago. And that's going to be something that we just cannot make up. You know, we're using about 107 million bushels last year. Today they announced 89.9, so quite a deficit to make up, and we're not able to make all that up through exports. Some of it's coming from increased feed usage because we have heavier animals on feed at a longer period of time.
Right. Yeah, on the ethanol side of things, the way to describe it, I think, right now is it's better, but it's not good. is the scenario in corn for ethanol. Now, on the corn exports front, how do things look to you through the end of the year?
Well, you know, it's a good question. A lot of people are not talking about this, but, you know, our corn exports have improved during the last quarter or so, April, May, June. We've seen better exports than what we were anticipating. But now South America's second harvest of corn is becoming available. And so they have a lot of supply that they need to work through. Unlike the soybeans, where they're virtually sold out of all their soybeans through this marketing year, and that's why China's turning to the United States, Argentina corn is going to be plentiful. Brazil's crop is plentiful. Right now, Argentina corn is 43 to 45 cents cheaper than the U.S. Gulf. So the corn prices, Brazil's about 19 cents to 20 cents a bushel cheaper. They have a real competitive advantage when you look at just flat price compared to our U.S. exports. So we're going to see, I think, a slowdown going into the next 3 months as South American supplies dominate the world export activity.
Okay. What have you heard on the Safrina corn crop, Brian? Anything that would threaten that availability coming out of South America?
Well, I don't think so. You know, we've heard some talk about concerns about their shipping, you know, because of the coronavirus, they're not able to get the ships loaded or unloaded as quickly as what they normally have. And that could play a part into it. But I think at this point, you know, they're going to get things worked out and they're going to ship what they have to ship due to these, you know, they can't store it. They don't have the storage facilities that we do here in the United States. They're going to get things worked out. They're going to ship their product and it's going to cut into the U.S. export market.
Yeah. Yeah. Currency. Who's getting the advantage now on the currency wars?
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. We've seen the U.S. dollar drop here quite a bit. You know, we came into you know, the month of March at a very high price level. The June U.S. dollar was over 103, and since our economy has slowed down, the U.S. dollar has weakened, and that's, I think, probably going to be the key driving force on what the U.S. dollar does in the next quarter if we're able to open our economy and rebound and see a robust reopening. U.S. dollar is going to maintain a lot of strength, especially to the world markets, to the world competitors, and that's going to hurt our exports as well. Conversely, if our economy, United States economy, starts to weaken, pulls back, the U.S. dollar also should pull back. Yep. And I think that would help us out on the export markets. But again, compared to other countries, right now, South America has a huge advantage.
Gotcha. We're talking with Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. When we come back, what's the influence of this demand on the quarterly grain stocks? Coming up next. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmer's First Thing Today. Yesterday marked the biggest jump in COVID-19 cases in 2 months. As a matter of fact, if you look at the total number of daily cases, it looks like the second wave is starting. Larry Kudlow says China has stepped forward on phase one trade deal. India permits up to 500,000 metric tons of corn imports at substantially lower tariffs, also allowing imports of milk and cream powder and of rapeseed oil and sunflower oil at lower tariffs. Trump administration may extend the tax filing deadline beyond July 15. And there's unease about China's COVID-19 pre-certification requests out there. Chinese consumers are panicked, tanking demand for seafood and shunning some other products. Check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, hey, and if you want to hear some good conservation talk, go take a listen to the second half of this morning's show with Wayne and Lori on the Farmer Forum. Boy, that was they had some great ideas on water quality improvement, on some plots for pollinators. It was a really good conversation. We're talking this afternoon with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. Before we get back to that conversation, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today. July hard red winter wheat futures 3.75 cents lower at 431 and a quarter. July SRW fell 4.75 cents to 481 and a quarter. July spring wheat 2 cents higher, 516 and three quarters. July corn futures 0.75 cents lower at 324 and a quarter. East corn closed at 333 and three quarters, down 3 cents on the day. July bean futures 4.25 cents lower, 870 and three quarters. November beans closed at 870 even, down 4 cents. July cotton dropped 138 points to 61.66. In the cattle complex, August live cattle futures 85 cents lower at 96.35. August feeders down 32.5 cents at 132.87.5. And July lean hog futures down 97.5 cents at 45.92. Dease hogs down 30 cents at 52 bucks even. Let's get back to the conversation now with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. Brian, before we get back to the expectations for the quarterly grain stocks report and the acreage report, anything going on in the livestock trade that you feel like maybe we need to make note of?
Well, you know, I think the last time I was on, we talked about how the economy would open up and we should see a rally in the market as we anticipate that opening. And we did, and we got up above $100 on a lot of the contracts. The October got up to 104 and August up in the 101, 102 area. We think those are some ideal hedging places as the cash market likely to continue to work lower here. I think it's just going to take months instead of weeks to work through this backlog of cattle that we have. We have a lot of really heavy cattle, some that have been on feed for much longer than they anticipated, more than 30 days. And it's just going to take us time to work through it. Our kills have come back up to where we almost were a year ago. And so that's an encouraging sign. We've figured out how to get back to work safely. But it's just going to take, as I said, a long time to get through some of this. And so we wanted our clients to be covered, protected through the late summer, early part of the fall, until we can get maybe into some tighter supplies and in December, February timeframe.
Right. You know, real quick on the hog side of things, I'm going to go through the average trade guesses for the quarterly hogs and pigs report that we're getting tomorrow. I'll go through that in the final segment of today's show. But there's one that just it's such an example of the trials, the challenges that the industry has faced over the last several weeks. The on the market hog inventory, hogs weighing over 180 pounds, the average trade guess is up 18% from a year ago. I don't even. And the thing is, how do you get caught up? You can run at 100% of year ago, but if your market ready hog numbers are up 18% from a year ago, you cannot get caught up in that situation, Brian.
Right. It's a really dire situation to try and work through. You know, I know some packers trying to increase their Saturday and weekend kills to try and work through some more of this. And they're running into, you know, situations where their workers already are tired and taxed, working long shifts. And to ask them to work more is tough. They need to find more workers and keep them safe, keep them available to expand these kills so we can work through some of this backlog of supply that we have, because it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. Now you look to the lighter market hogs, the under 50 pounds, the average trade guess is 97.3% of year ago. The 50 to 120s, 102.3%, which suggests in that time period, we'd be looking at slaughter about even with year ago levels. When the lightweight hogs start coming to market, that feels manageable based on the recovery that we've already gone through, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that feels much more manageable, you know, compared to what we have seen. But you've got to get from point A to point B so we can see that type of recovery. Our weights did come down 1 pound this week. That's an encouraging sign, but we need to see them start dropping well below year ago levels.
Yeah, man, that is well put. You got to get from point A to point B before you can get to those recovery numbers. Okay, back to the grains. All that corn demand that we were talking about, what is that going to do to the corn stocks as of June 1 in the quarterly grain stocks report?
Yeah, you know, it's the loss of ethanol, I think, is what's really going to hurt the quarterly stocks numbers that are coming out. You know, we're looking at close to 5 billion bushels, maybe even a little bit more than that, as far as our quarterly stocks. And I think that's going to be kind of a wild card. A lot of producers that we've talked with are holding on, waiting for this one last gasp, so to speak, that maybe the acreage will be down, the quarterly stocks will be down, we'll have one final rally that they can sell their crop into. A lot of producers have moved corn off of their bins and into you know, some commercial entity. There's like free storage offers and that sort of thing out there that a lot of these producers are taking advantage of. So they're waiting. That one last gasp could get a lot of product to be moved. I know we've heard some rumors and talk that maybe between 4 and 5 billion bushels of old crop corn needs to be priced yet in the next several months. And that, I think, is really something that's going to hurt the basis levels over the next several months, and something producers really should be looking at closely as well. We were asked a question by a customer this week, you know, if they had corn that they needed to either roll to the next month and hold on. There's, you know, there's storage charges incurred with that. I think, you can do something like that, or you can move the product while the basis is still somewhat narrow and then move into a futures options contract. That'll give you some upside potential yet going into the last half of the summer if there's a reason to see this market rally.
Okay. All right.
But it's less risky. You know, you're minimizing your risk because at this point, you know, your window of opportunity here is getting pretty narrow. We've got maybe one shot on this corn market yet.
Right. Yeah. Back to market action. I'm sorry to do this to you, but I'm going to make you go all the way back to market action that we're looking at today. The bear spread action in that corn market, do you read much into it when it happens on a day like today?
You know, you could look at that, and July's holding in there pretty decent, only down a penny versus D's down 3.5. You know, the market, I think, is trying to tell you here that the new crop supplies are going to be plentiful. There's a chance that these quarterly stocks will be a little tighter than what the trade had expected because of increased demand in the form of feed usage. But you've got ethanol that demand that you've lost. So there's a trade-off there, and that's what makes it really tricky to try and guess. That the spreads certainly tell you that there's a chance that these old crop prices may try and move higher at least one more time versus what the new crop is doing, where there's not much hope for that new crop yet, and we're taking a lot of premium out of the market.
Yeah. Does it surprise you that the July 21 contract is still trading at about a 24, 25 cent premium to the D's 20?
At this time, it doesn't. If we go into the harvest and we don't go out to a full carry, given the fact, assuming we grow this huge crop, 15 billion bushel crop, that carry should widen out to 28 to 30 cents. And that would be considered to be more full carry.
Okay.
We've had producers ask us, should I sell corn at 340? Well, if you have storage and you sell that 340 D's corn, you can roll it to July for pick up another 30 cents. So now you're looking at 370 corn in effect, less your basis, and that'll pay some bills if you have that storage capability. So I wouldn't want to hedge July at this point, but if it gets to the full carry, we'd want to roll hedges out to July.
Okay, very good. Quarterly grain stocks for beans. What are you watching most closely?
Well, the thing we're going to look at on the soybeans is they're going to have a tough time in here, I'm afraid. This report is probably going to show the second largest quarterly stocks for this time of year in history, trailing last year. We narrowed up from last year because it was so large, but it's still going to be a real burdensome number, and we likely are going to see an increase in soybean acres. So it's going to put the pressure against soybeans in the next several weeks to see that weather. If we have some bearish numbers as far as stocks and acreage goes, is there weather in July and into August that can give this market a rally? Otherwise, we're going to remove some of that premium we've been talking about. November beans up in that 880 range have already turned into 870 beans and could drop even further if we don't have any real bullish surprises from weather or out of this report next week.
Right. Okay. On the acreage report, 83.5 were the planting intentions on soybeans. Are you over that?
Yeah, we're coming in a little bit over that. USDA is going to be up near 84.9, 85 million, and we're just slightly under that. I do think we've lost some corn and at the expense of gaining some against the soybeans. We probably have a little prevent plant going to happen in the corn market as well. But, from what I think the USDA is missing the boat, they're probably a little bit too aggressive on exports. And okay, they need to bump up these acreage numbers. And when they do, I think you're looking at ending stocks back over 500 million bushels, maybe close to 550 million.
Going in the wrong direction, Brian. I want you to go the other way.
we're hoping to tighten these balance sheets. And I think we tighten them up in the corner a little bit because we are going to lose some acres from that 97 million they said in March. I do think we tighten it up just a little bit, but you're looking at 3.1 to 3.3 billion carryout. It's still going to be a rather burdensome number.
3.13. Okay, gotcha. Brian, thanks, buddy. It's Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. We'll be back to wrap things up here in just a moment.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Glad that you could join us today. Davis will be making a return tomorrow. For those of you wondering where he has been,
thank God.
Just took a few days off. Big Apple. Did you hear that little slide in there? Thank God. You've been doing great, Joe.
Oh,
hey,
thanks.
Come on.
Thanks very much.
One of the headlines from Pro Farmers First Thing today that I decided not to include at the bottom of the hour, because every now and then we got to do a Powered by Pro Farmer item. And one of the items from First Thing today is certainly worthy of it. Now, get this. Here's the headline. Lawmakers focus on major meat packers' work protections and exports. And you think to yourself, well, okay, what farm state lawmakers, senators are bringing this up and want to dig into this? No. Senators Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, and Cory Booker, Democrat from New Jersey, both obviously well-known senators on the Democrat side, want information from four major U.S. meat companies on the actions they took to protect workers from COVID-19. Okay, and get this. And on the level of meat they produced during March, May, their level of exports to China and to other countries, the average increase in wholesale prices, average change in prices paid to producers, and whether they increased their imports of livestock from outside the U.S. This is worrisome to me. This is two lawmakers that have decided, you know, that doesn't smell right. I don't like the fact that we were exporting during that period. They sought some information and were fed some information that is leading to this inquiry. Now, with that said, how would you like to be Tyson, JBS, Cargill, or Smithfield Foods? Because now you're catching it from Grassley. You know, yeah. On one side, you're catching it from Grassley. Let's figure out how we're going to bring some transparency into this cash cattle trade. And now you're catching it from Warren and Booker out on the East Coast. So from the producer's point of view, some producer's point of view, not all, need to stress that, but with Senator Grassley's 5014 proposal, that is representing some producers' concerns about what is going on in the cash market. This is a consumer-driven concern. They want to know why their ribeye spiked to, on the East Coast, what, at the meat case, $22, $24 a pound? Something like that, I would imagine. So that is a consumer-driven concern that is coming from Warren and Booker. So that's one that we all need to keep a close eye on. I don't think there's any question about that. The quarterly Hogs and Pigs report that is coming our way tomorrow, just as the – well, it's tomorrow we will be getting – I want to take a look at the average trade guesses, and this is from Reuters. I'm looking at ProFarmer.com, but this is a survey done by Reuters. Total number of all hogs and pigs on June 1 up 3.7% from year-ago levels. The range of guesses on that is 102.1 to 105.1. It's not that wide of a range, and that 103.7 is almost the median point as well. So that's the total number of hogs expected on June 1. Kept for breeding, 98.2% of year-ago. The high on the kept for breeding is 98.8%. So nobody is looking for an increase in the breeding herd after what we've gone through over the past couple of months. The range, 97.4% to 98.8%. Kept for marketing, 104.2% of year-ago levels is the average trade guess according to the Reuters poll. The guess range on this, 102.4% to 105.7%. So increase in the number of hogs kept for marketing. Let's break that down. We did that a little bit with Brian Hoops. The total number of market hogs under 50 pounds, 97.3% of year ago, 50 to 119 pounds, 102.3. Here's where it really starts to build, the 120 to 179 pounders, 105.2%, and then over 180 pounds, 117.9%. And like I said, that is a straight reflection of almost an impossible situation to process your way out of. When we've got 17 or 18% more market-ready hogs on hand than what we did a year ago in a market where we're struggling to stay at where we were a year ago on processing, that's a tough situation. So let's look forward. Pig crop for March, May, 98.7% of year ago. Kind of a wide range on that pig crop, 94% up to 101.5%. The number of pigs per litter, 99.1%. So a dip on the total number of pigs per litter for March, May. Fairwings, 98.8% of year ago. That's the March-May period. Fairwing intentions, June to August, 95.3% is the average trade guess. Fairwing intentions, September through November, 95.6% of year ago. So when we look forward at those fairwing intentions, the intentions right now are that we are going to see a smaller pig crop in the first half of 2021. That should tighten up the market supply going forward. Real quick, National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. And this is starting to get us a little deeper into July. It takes us right up to Independence Day, June 30 to July 4. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. We've got above normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. Eastern Iowa, Northern Illinois, Northern Indiana, Ohio looking at normal. Got below normal precipitation expected in Wisconsin and Michigan. And when we step out to the 8 to 14 day, those warm temperatures are warmer than normal temperatures stick around in the Corn Belt. And it's a mix of normal to above normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. Wow, thanks for listening today. Thanks to Mike Pearson and to producer Joe Stackler. Tomorrow morning, Davis is going to be back. We're going to have a conversation with Mike Conaway, congressman from Texas. And tomorrow afternoon, Carl Setzer from AgriVisor, right here on AgriTalk.